Well, here we go. I'm Becky, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am not going to look on the sides because I do not want to see myself on those screens. So if you're right in the middle, which is nobody, you're going to see it. But anyway, I am... Stop it. I'm setting my timer, and I will be lucky if I make it 30 minutes, which is a good thing, I think, because everybody really kind of wants to, you know, get up, move around. We've been sitting around all day, so that's my excuse. But anyway, and get ready for the next workshops. But my sobriety date is October 29th, 1998. My home group is the New Women's Group in Savannah, Georgia, and that has been my home group from pretty much the beginning of my sobriety and through now. I have an incredible sponsor, and I've had some absolutely outstanding sponsors prior to the one I have now, including the one who, you know, sold me out to the delegate to come up here and speak tonight. So, anyway. And I sponsor women, and there are just so many aspects of being a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous that I don't think 30 minutes would really capture at all. But I decided, because over dinner we talked about the circle and triangle, well, Kim H. sitting next to me talked about the circle and the triangle when we were talking about service. And so I thought I'd kind of structure it around that a little bit. You know, so there's the recovery, the unity, and the service, and just, you know, my experience, strength, and hope in those three areas. So I was up at a really nice traditions workshop up in LAJ a couple months ago. Yeah. And I heard a woman who was presenting, and the one thing that she said that stuck out to me was, don't be afraid to share how sick you got. And I think a lot of times I have kind of skipped over some of that. I think in recent times, you know, if I share my story with a new sponsor or whatever, I may skip over that. But I was a very, very sick woman. Just a little bit of the history that led up to the final fall. I grew up with a slightly dysfunctional family, but, you know, we had pretty much everything. But I think the thing that was prominent in my thinking about it was, you know, I'm a baby boomer, and so my parents and all of the friends that they had and what, you know, the community were all in that sign of after war, let's, you know, celebrate, let's have a wonderful time. And my father owned a bar. It was the Woodland Inn in Springfield, Pennsylvania. And I grew up around that bar. That doesn't mean that's why I drank. That doesn't mean that's why I'm an alcoholic. I have finally come to understand, I think my father was an alcoholic, not because he ever had the opportunity to really come to terms with that. He didn't live very long. And I think a lot of it was just when I learned more about alcoholism, and I learned a lot through our sister program, I could see that that was our family dynamic. You know, it just was. And others, you know, in the family, here and there, we had, you know, on both sides. It, again, wasn't, you know, the reason why I became an alcoholic. My brother's not an alcoholic, you know, other members of the family. I had a lot of those isms from the very beginning without, you know, I selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. That was me from day one. But I thought I was generous, very honest, service-oriented and kind and loving and everything else. But now that I can look back, I can see that the disease was there in my soul, you know, from the very beginning. But through schooling, high school and college, I did not do much drinking. It just was not, I wanted to be a good girl. And so I did other things. So it was not on my repertoire at the time. And probably somewhere in the middle to my late 20s, I can now look back and go, wow, you know, when I went out on Friday night with the friends to drink, I looked forward to that all week long. And when it came to that, I didn't just go have a drink and then go home. I was the last one out of there. And the next day, I suffered through it. That, you know, always progresses, as we know. Became a situation where I ended up in, and, oh, God, I meant to say this in the beginning, you know, this is a stupid thing to say, but I'm a pure alcoholic. I mean, we joke about that a little bit, but truly, I mean, I never liked drugs. It was nothing I could ever latch on to. I remember, you know, we would do cocaine sometimes just for recreation, but, you know, but when I hit a wall with, like, you know, man, this is not helping me out in this whatever today after staying up all night, I stopped. I completely stopped, had no issues with it. I could control alcohol, you know, so we'll just stick with that. And control went from, okay, we're going to have a few drinks out here Saturday night with the friends or, you know, maybe something in the middle of the week or something, to I could not go through a single solitary day without a drink. Not a drink. A gallon of Gallo Chablis. That was what I had come to. It was just, that was it. And if I didn't have that, I was in true panic mode. So, you know, as things gradually, you know, began to increase in these activities, I also, about that same time, met a man who decided that we should get married, and of course we did. And he's a really wonderful guy, and I'm very, very grateful I've had him in my life. Should I have married him? Probably not. I had absolutely no maturity whatsoever to be able to participate in a relationship of any sort. And we struggled along, you know, we had a child, and I am forever ever grateful, because, you know, that son is the light of my life. He's my heart on the outside. But, you know, things weren't going too terribly well, and he was a psychologist, and he he worked at Georgia Regional too, which is even worse. So, you know, he kept kind of pushing a little bit, you know. So I tried I won't do this, but I'll do pot. I hated pot, hated it. You know, back into the drinking, hiding it, whatever. Made it through pregnancies without drinking, thank God. Then this next part of it, I don't bring it up because it's a dramatic thing, but it is a real strong part of my story. We had a second child who died, and he was just a couple days old. He had a heart condition that at the time could not be corrected. That was, sadly, you know, the greatest excuse anybody could have to drink. I mean, not that I wasn't, you know, completely in deep, deep bereavement. It was tragic, but it also was, okay, wouldn't you drink too if you just lost a baby? Wouldn't you? You know, people gave me lots of bottles of wine to keep it going for a long time. And then, you know, the behavior just kept getting worse and worse and worse, to the point where end of marriage. I spent, let's see, I think it was probably about 9 years, 10 years, just going deeper and deeper, circling the drain. It just kept getting worse and worse and worse. So many circumstances. I did get pulled over. But, you know, the guy said, oh, you're just having an argument with your boyfriend, so I'll let you go. You know, that was fine. The police did come to the house another time when, after marriage, I had this long-term relationship, and he was getting a little tired of this situation, and he would call the police on me. And what do? I run out the back door, and I go hide under a kayak. That, you know, it's like the cat that goes under the bed with the tail hanging out or something. So, you know, that didn't work. Anyway, they never arrested me. I never ended up in jail. Should have. Absolutely should have. The number of times I drove drunk with my family in the car, I can't even tell you. Middle of the day, nighttime, whatever. It was just so pathetic and so sick. Finally, that boyfriend and my mother, after they had taken the keys away from me, because they had it, you know, the keys are gone. So what do? I hop on my bike and I ride up to the gas station and I write a bad check and buy a 6-pack of beer at 9 o'clock in the morning. Ride partway back, hide behind a tombstone, and drink those beers. Well, finally I'm done. I go home, I'm drunk, and they were like, this is it. You are either going to Georgia Regional or you are going into rehab, one or the other. You choose. My ex-husband's at Georgia Regional. I think I'll go to rehab. And so I did. And, I mean, when I hear some of the language in the big book about incomprehensible demoralization, that just rings so true to me. That is, I was as lonely and dark and despairing and disgusted with myself and you name it. But could I stop drinking? Not at all. I could not do it. I knew that it was killing me. I knew it was killing my family around me and my friends, and my work had already been, you know, yanked away from me, but it just couldn't have gotten any darker. So I did. There were a few more white chips after that, and then a few more white chips after that, because I'm a stubborn, stubborn alcoholic. I do not want things to be the way somebody else tells me to do it. And that's, Bill Wilson had the right idea. Bill and Bob and everybody else involved in establishing this program, we do not like to be told we have to do this, that, or the other. It works in a lot of cases. I've seen a lot, especially men in sobriety who sponsor people. They're really good. Pick up the damn ashtray and go clean it. You know, that's, you know, we don't do that ashtray anymore, but it did not work for me. Until I finally, you know, in a moment, I heard somebody describe it this way, and I think that's what happened to me. In a moment where my disease turned its back long enough for a higher power to just enter just a moment and just say, you're done. You're done. You don't have to do this anymore. You do not have to do this. And I want to live. I want to live. I want to live a life that is not what I've been doing for so long. And that was when I sat my buttocks into the chair and listened. And people were... In my home group, they had seen me come and go and come and go, white chip, you know. And thank God they are still my dearest friends. But at that point in time, they would look at me and go, yeah, right, she's getting sober. And you know, so I didn't feel a part of yet, but I knew that there was reason for that. And I just kept sticking around and kept doing it. And one day, on top of another, you know, I'd wake up in the morning and it was like, I didn't drink. I went to bed sober. I woke up sober. Hallelujah. I can't believe this is possible. Was it easy? No. Not at all, especially the first few weeks. but every day built a little more joy onto the day before. And I could see my son in a different light. I could see my boyfriend, and I could see my dear, blessed mother, what she went through trying to put up with me, and but never giving up, never, never giving up. It finally, you know, stuck. After a couple of years of sobriety, people started saying, maybe she's going to do it. Maybe she's going to do it. My family would finally trust me a little bit more. Life was so much better. I was working again. Things are, you know, beginning to come together. But I didn't feel that hole inside. I didn't have the worth that would come. And so my sponsor at that time was like, you just need to do some service work. So here's the second, you know, here we are in Unity, traditions. And I only learned it by doing the service work. And I, you know, I had coffee with her, left there, went to the meeting, sat down, and a woman turned to me and said, would you be secretary for our group? I guess I better, you know, I did. And from that point on, from 2 years of sobriety on, I could have started earlier, but 2 years of sobriety on, I don't know, there haven't been many gaps in these years that I didn't have some kind of a service position. And in doing so, of course, it's, you know, it was incumbent upon me to begin to understand the traditions. And the traditions began to work on my worth. And I began to understand unity. I began to understand humility. I began to understand what a trusted servant really was, and that servant leadership that exists in this program. That I can look back now, and I've heard it from a lot of other people. The traditions give me a basis for living in every aspect of my life. There's all kinds of written material out there that, I mean, Debbie Kay sent me something recently too that is traditions for relationships. There is nothing that we can't have in our lives or some aspect of our lives that we can't use the traditions for. And I have continued to grow. I'm never going to be perfect. I'm just not. And I'm not going to ever be all the fabulous, wonderful things that I thought I was when I was selfish, self-centered, dishonest, and afraid. But it has been that learning course that I've had. And then the service part, I don't mean to kind of like go into all this gobbledygook about stuff, but if you haven't really studied the concepts, they're really pretty cool. And it's really, we were having a meeting the other day, and somebody who is a businesswoman, she goes, wow, that is a real model for a business, you know, an entrepreneurship. And I just recently, you know, in working with somebody who's coming up behind me, and you will get to know Chris next year a whole lot. He's a fabulous person. Going through all that stuff again, I'm amazed. I'm amazed again. How could anybody have put all this stuff together? And in a way that here we are decades, and so much controversy and so much screaming and yelling about what is or isn't right for this program, we're still here. We're still here. And our primary purpose of carrying the message to the next suffering alcoholic is the reason. If I don't give it back, I will not stay sober. Or, as somebody else put it earlier, I'm not getting the best that I can out of this life as a sober alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, which has huge gifts to give. And among those, oh my God, I'm starting to get teary-eyed. Among those is just the people I get to meet here. It just blows my mind, the caliber of human beings that have been the trusted servants that I have been blessed to work with over these years. is a gift beyond. I also came to understand this after a while, too, is that if I had not gotten sober, I would likely have had a stroke first, because that was the physical stuff that was going on. I probably would have been disabled. I'd be dead by now. My son, who was 11 when I got sober, is now 35. He's married. I have 3 grandchildren. And I would have missed all of that. I would have missed it all. I would have missed all of you. I would have missed, you know, going off in a van and going in the mountains and hiking and doing things that I never thought that I would ever have an opportunity to do, because I was drunk and sad and pathetic and incapable of living life on life's terms. And yeah, crap has happened. The last thing I want to just talk about a little bit is the from my perspective, the spiritual element of this program. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with a very, very strong opinion about religion. My mother, for very good reasons, took us out of the Episcopal Church when I was probably about 8 or 9 years old. And I always thought that church was the only place you could find spirituality until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. But along the line, I knew that there was something there. I knew it. When my son died, it was an experience that was deep grief, but also an understanding that there was a higher power involved in this and that somehow there was a gift. And I believed that, and I saw the gifts with time. And I believe that there's no one way to connect to the spiritual life or to the spiritual sense that we all have an opportunity to connect with or not. And you can still be sober. You can be anything as long as you have a desire to stop drinking. I'm going to quit there because I'm going to start getting too teary-eyed. And I have a higher power in my life now that I never, ever expected I could have. I have a connection. It took a while. It took a long time to get here. But I kept exploring, and I kept seeking, and I kept trying to key into it and trying to find what was true. And when I stopped trying to, somebody said, when I stopped trying to educate myself into spirituality, then it happened, and I had a conscious contact, and I do, and it's there every day. I'm just blown away and amazed. So don't leave before the miracle happens, because there's more than one out there for you. And thank you so much for letting me be of service. Thank you.